In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents a voice of truth and inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and understanding, illuminating new paths to a more fulfilled way of being as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a higher understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with tonight's special guest, spiritual teacher Swami Kriyananda. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am excited. And now I'm more nervous. But thank you nonetheless. Nervousness is good, I trust. I'm trusting that a lot of good is happening, and I am feeling like I am at the right place at the right time for all the good to happen right here and right now. I happen to be, for those of you listening and not here in this beautiful audience, at the Ananda House here in Los Angeles, Hollywood, California, started by our guest tonight, Swami Kriyananda. It's a beautiful place with beautiful energy, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you. Talking about things are changing, and I feel like I'm at the right place at the right time. I'd like to think so, and I continue to think so. I know that there's some things that are happening that don't feel right, and today I was trying to find a positive spin on people in Egypt breaking and destroying things that they might think belong to them because they might have originated in Egypt, like some of the mummies decapitating them, and King Tut's treasures destroying some of them. And on the one hand, they might have originated in Egypt by Egyptians, but they almost belong to the world now, almost even the universe. And it's part of an energy that has been around for so many years. And I wonder if that's right. And then I thought about how in my home, I've been getting rid of certain things that I don't feel belong to me anymore. And I've been giving them away. I certainly haven't been decapitating them. But I have been sharing them with other people, and some things just needed to go, not to other people, but into the trash. So I thought, what if possibly on a universal level, we might be energetically getting rid of a little bit of history? I'm not saying there was anything wrong with King Tut or what was destroyed, but I was trying to think, maybe there's some feng shui action going on here, that these people, whether consciously or not, are actually helping us move forward and helping us maybe change some of our history and maybe not have us attached to our history. And it's interesting, as I was reflecting on this over the past couple days as well, I was asked about a week ago to sing at this little town outside of Los Angeles, and it's close to Los Angeles, but yet so far. Stars don't live there. They don't have big productions there. Movies aren't done there. And a friend of mine asked me for a favor and said, do you mind singing for one of their small church productions? And I said, no, I would love to. And so I called them, and they were so happy to hear from me that And they asked me for some information, so I sent it to them and my picture. And my friend said to me last night, whatever you're doing with them, tone it down about two notches. And I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, I start hearing some rumbling that this big star from Hollywood is coming to their little town. And I said, well, certainly I never said that. And I said, is that what they said, that I was being arrogant? And he said, oh, no, no, nothing like that. They were just saying, this big star is coming from Hollywood to come and sing in our town. And I said, but I didn't say that. I just sent them my bio. And he said, I know, but just tone it down. And I thought, I don't know what he means, but okay, I'll tone it down. So then minutes later, we were in a party environment, and I watched this friend of mine be asked a question that he knew the answer to. But he didn't want the people around him to know he knew the answer, because he didn't want them to feel like he was making them small. When they were asking him the question, I didn't understand why he just didn't answer the question. And I looked at my friend and I thought, he's playing small because he doesn't want to offend people who are trying to actually stand taller and know the answer to the question. And I looked at him and I was in disbelief. And then I remembered what he told me. Turn it down a couple notches. Don't be you, in other words. Don't shine. That embarrasses me. So when I pulled my friend aside, I said, why didn't you answer the question? And he knew right away. And he says, I'm so sorry. I said, don't be sorry for me. He said, no, I'm sorry. I asked you to not be you, because I have problems being me. And I thought, wow, I used to have problems being me. And now I'm this big star from Hollywood, evidently. And I thought, somewhere I crossed into this place. And it wasn't from arrogance, and it wasn't from demanding respect or saying, hey, this is who I am. It was just sharing some of what I've done and standing in the place of me. And I thought, if our guest tonight, Swami Kriyananda, did not humbly stand in the place of he, none of us would be here. We wouldn't have not only his teachings, but some of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda that may have been lost. We wouldn't have had that if he played small, because some of us didn't know the truth of what he knows. So I was grateful to be watching the news, to be having this friend show me an example, and to know that today I was going to be in the presence of greatness. Not greatness saying, look at me, how great I am. But look how great God is. Look how great we are. And look how great we all can be. And for that, I am truly honored. Our guest tonight is a prolific and internationally regarded author. He is a speaker, an accomplished composer. Yeah, I'm talking about you.
Oh, yes. He is the humblest person I know, and I want everyone to know it.
Oh, but I'm not finished, so it gets better. He is a composer, he is a playwright, an artist, and a world-renowned spiritual teacher. Swami Kriyananda refers to himself simply as a humble disciple of the great spiritual leader, Paramahansa Yogananda. That's all you are. And indeed, that humility is the most striking aspect of a man widely recognized as one of the world's foremost wisdom teachers and authorities on meditation and yoga, and the last disciple of Yogananda himself, still teaching in public life. It is when in meeting Yogananda at the age of 22 that Kriyananda, then known as J. Donald Walters, found his path. Swami Kriyananda is now one of the world's foremost experts again in meditation, yoga, and spiritual practice, and he has authored more than 140 books and composed over 400 pieces of music. Kriyananda is a member of the Club of Budapest, where he serves along with the Dalai Lama, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Mikhail Gorbachev, Elie Wiesel, Jane Goodall, Peter Gabriel, and other leaders in the planetary evolution of consciousness. For the last 4 years of Yogananda's life, the young disciple, Swami Kriyananda, absorbed the guru's teachings and wisdom, and committed his life to furthering the master's vision and message. Yogananda appointed him as head of the monastery, authorized him to teach in his name, and to give initiation into Kriya Yoga, and entrusted him with the tasks of writing and developing what he called World Brotherhood Colonies. And for the last 60 years, Swami Kriyananda has done just that. I am honored to welcome Swami Kriyananda to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. So you're all that, huh?
None of it.
None of it.
If I am able to do anything, it's to the extent that I can get myself out of the way. It really seems strange. I've done so much because I haven't done anything. Everything I've tried to do, I've said, you please guide me. You tell me what to do. If I have a melody to write, I think that I wanted to say this, give me a melody. It's there. I don't have to create it. I haven't created anything. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make me feel inferior. It makes me neither inferior nor superior. The job of every human being is to realize that he is a manifestation of God. God is the only reality. And our life on earth is finally, after God knows how many incarnations, to understand he is the doer.
So when do we get our glory? When do we say, I did this?
Well, if you stop wanting to say I've done this, then you begin to feel bliss. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The goal of life, God is bliss. Ever existing, ever conscious, ever new bliss. We are manifestations of that. Everybody in the world looks to avoid pain and to find happiness. And they don't know that that happiness that they're really seeking is the bliss of God and of their own nature. Ultimately, you, I, everybody will have to reach that point where they understand that this is all God's show. And the glory is his. We don't need that glory. The glory is an obstacle. You were saying something about jokingly about being nervous. I've never been nervous. The reason is that I just accept that if I'm a fool and everybody knows it, what does it matter if they know it? So I'm perfectly happy with that.
So you can't make a mistake then that way.
Oh, I can make hundreds of mistakes. But the one truth is that if I express him, that I'm expressing truth. And my only desire is to express truth.
So getting in the way to you is one of us saying, I did that. I created that. Yes. This is mine and I own it.
Yes. And the search for personal glory, that glory is a very dim light. The light of God is brilliant. Honestly, when I think of it sometimes, I can't help weeping. It's so beautiful.
Thank you. So I guess I can't make a mistake, so. and I didn't plan this, and it's so beautiful, I couldn't have planned it myself, so what do I know?
Well, I tell you, when you feel that he is working through you, he does a much better job. Why make a mess of it? You know, interestingly, when I did, Yogananda had me give my first lecture when I was only 22. I had come to him at the age of 22. This was 8 months later. And Saturday morning, I was told that I was to give the service for him in San Diego. And I was so sorry for those poor people. They were expecting him. I couldn't be nervous. And they seemed to enjoy the talk, it's fine, but I've never felt it really mattered. Only God matters.
So, I don't know what to ask. I am blank. God, where are you now? I am being open.
What about my search for truth?
What about your search for truth? Thank you, God.
Well, I've always, in a sense, I've always thought of it. When I was 13, I began seeking it seriously. And I left God out of the picture completely. Because the God that was taught about in my church just didn't inspire me. I didn't like the guy. Mm. It didn't have, he was judgmental, he didn't have joy. It was too stern, too puritanical. Well, I didn't like all that. So I was seeking truth desperately, but I sought it through physics, through astronomy, through politics, through arts, through, I played the piano and did a lot of the arts and so on. Finally, I realized that nothing really can be answered without the word God. And so I took a long walk into the evening, and I said, if there's a God, what must he be? And I realized that I'm conscious, and I'm asking him this consciously. Therefore, he must be consciousness. And I, therefore, have to be a part of him. And I had never thought of anybody seeking God or anything, but this gave me the thought that that's what I must do with my life. And I decided to dedicate my life to seeking God. I wondered if I was going crazy. I'd never read the lives of saints. I didn't know such people existed. But I couldn't see any rational alternative to seeking him. And I remember that my father, God, you know, when you raise one hand to God, he drops two to lift you up. And he arranged that my parents be out of the country when this happened. They would have stopped me. I knew nothing about the Indian philosophy. How could I suddenly give everything to that philosophy? It would have been impossible. But my father was sent to Egypt to be the petroleum explorer there. He was an oil geologist. And the very day I put my mother on the ship to go join him, I went uptown New York, found Doubleday Duran, as it was called then, walked in and saw Autobiography of a Yogi. And that picture so attracted me, I bought the book. And I read it, and something about it, what I loved more than anything else was his perfect attitude in every circumstance. It was humble, it was joyous, it was everything beautiful. And he was a vegetarian. All right, I would be a vegetarian from then on. This was nearly 63 years ago. He was a monk. All right, I would be a monk. I didn't know any of this stuff, but that was what he did, I wanted to do. And after finishing the book, I took the next bus nonstop across the country by bus. And the first words I said to him were words I had never dreamed of saying to anybody. I said, I want to be your disciple. And he accepted me, and well, whatever else you said there has happened since then.
Do you believe that some of this was decided before you came here?
Yes, absolutely.
So you just awoke at that time to what you were supposed to be?
I think so. I do think so. You know, interestingly enough, my main job in this life has been starting communities. But I mentally tried to start a community when I was 15. And I saw this is what the world needs. And then the world starts falling apart. This is what people will run towards. And so, yes, in a sense, I think I knew what I had to do from the beginning. It's hard to say it and be convincing. I myself am not convinced. But it looks that way. It looks suspicious.
It looks suspicious. And these communities, what do they mean to you? You say if the world starts running falling apart, people are going to run to them.
You know,
why?
People in the cities, just imagine a real depression, which I think is coming, when the trucks bringing food can't come into the inner cities because of the mobs on the outside grabbing for the food when they can. Just imagine a time when there's actual starvation. I think we're coming to it. Imagine that and think, wouldn't a wonderful solution be for a few people to get together, go out into the country, grow their own food, build their own buildings. And this is what I have done. In the beginning, it was, you know, the first steps in any long voyage are difficult. After that, they become easier. But now we have 8 communities, maybe a 9th starting here in Los Angeles. We have about 1,000 members living in them, all of them. One is in Italy, one is in tour in India, quite a few here on the West Coast. And the wonderful thing about it is that people live in harmony together. You don't find competition, you don't find anger. It's really an ideal way of life. I'm trying my best to get people to understand. They don't have to be Ananda communities. When people ask me, well, what am I trying to convert people to? I said, I'm not trying to convert them to anything except their own higher self. I don't care what they belong or not. I myself would leave in an instant if it weren't giving me what I wanted. But these communities, I don't think we can handle too many. Communities, sort of in quotes, all over. I think this idea will spread all over the world. I think it'll be a new way of life. City living is a bit of a curse. There's really too much competition. I've noticed this time in Los Angeles, almost nobody will make eye contact with me. And what I find is in our community, you're everybody's friend.
As a matter of fact, as I've been interacting with your community for the reasons of the show, from the moment that I spoke to the first person and then the second person, third person, everybody was so nice and they all made me feel like I was special. And then I came to realize they do that with everybody.
Well, they're a wonderful group of people. Don't listen.
So there are people, I'm sure, that want to find bliss and want to say, okay, I'm not going to take ownership of this is me doing this. This is God. But at the same time, I want to live in a nice house. I want to wear designer clothing. I want to drive a designer car.
I'd say that if they want something, let them do it. There's nothing wrong with it. It'll only delay them a little longer, but if they have that desire.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but it'll delay.
But nonetheless, if you have the desire, why pretend you don't? And I think that, you know, an interesting thing that I found out in India, they always talk about India's spirituality being due to its poverty. That isn't true. When Marco Polo went there in 1400 or something, he found that it was the wealthiest country in the world. I find that in the ashrams of India today, you don't find poor people there. They're all either middle class or upper middle class. And the reason is that they have enough money to be able to relax. The poor farmer has to get out there and shove his cows through arrows through, what's the word?
Whatever farmers do, I don't know.
Yeah, that sort of thing. They don't have time to think about God. They'll say Ram, 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 and go to bed, and get up in the morning, Ram, Ram, and go to work. But people who have enough money to relax, to have enough food, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that people need to work for what they want and for what they need. There's a difference between wants and needs. And I would say to certainly diminish your desires, but if you got them, go ahead and look for it. I don't see anything wrong with that.
No judgment.
No, why judge? Everybody, it takes many, many incarnations to find God. Everybody will find him at his own rate. And the wonderful thing is that once it's all over, all the suffering is over, everything is over, not one saint has ever said, what a scam. They all say it's the most wonderful adventure that I can imagine. And each person's adventure is different. Each person is individual. This is another thing in the definition of bliss, ever new. And so that ever new bliss manifests differently in you and me and everybody. It's an absolutely thrilling story that we're going through. But supposing now you have a story of a rich man born to a rich man, gone to college, learned all the techniques of becoming wealthy because of his contacts, gets a good job, and marries the boss's daughter. And when the boss dies, he inherits the boss's home. You close that book about halfway through and say, what a bore. But if on the other hand, he was born on the wrong side of the tracks, if he was forced to study it by candlelight and work his way up gradually, and finally all the same things happen, you say, what a good story.
Especially if he had to walk 5 miles up the hill both ways. With holes in his shoes.
No end to the problems, but the thing is that we sort of need that in order to keep life interesting.
Well, to keep life interesting, you said something very interesting that I don't know that I'm looking forward to experiencing should it happen, but you're saying food not being able to come into the city and people grabbing off of trucks and that this may...
That won't be fun.
That won't be fun. Okay.
What is wonderful, though, is that at the end of it all, when you've learned your lessons, when you come out of it, you'll have all those memories. But still you'll say, I'm thankful for everything that ever happened. Things like that, for example, make you think more deeply.
Can we think before that happens so it doesn't
like
have
that.
To?
I'm trying here. That's partly why I'm giving these classes on
starting tomorrow.
Tuesday, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's partly why I'm doing it, to think before it happens. Prepare yourself for it. I don't want to see people suffering, but I think communities, there is land in the country, and I think that groups of people, they don't have to be Ananda people, but groups of people can live together. We have ironed out some of the kinks, making it easier for others to learn how to start communities. But I believe this is the way of the future.
You know, we had a guest on the show once who had cancer and completely changed his way of life. But before he got cancer and changed his way of life, I suggested to him as a friend and a coworker, you might want to change your way of life. His wife suggested the same thing, as did his children and grandchildren, but he didn't until he got cancer. And I'm thinking that what you're sharing is that we could
do it before. Unfortunately, too often it's after.
But those of us who get it, we don't have to go through that, right?
No, we don't have to go.
We don't. Okay.
No, you go through.
We come
a lot
live
less.
With you.
You go through a lot less. What'd you say?
We come live with you.
Oh no, not necessarily.
No.
I'm only joking. I'd be happy if you wanted to.
No, but I do have concern for all, I was going to say the people that I love, but that's saying only those people.
I know. Of course one does. And, what am I to say? We want to help them as we can. I'd like to help them in advance.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the no judgment part, how far does that go? You talked about the person who wants to go ahead and buy the clothes and the car and all that. Now, what about the person who wants to start a war or wants to pollute the ocean or with oil or wants to keep certain people from moving forward with certain technology?
There are wrongs in this world. The thing is that if we get involved in judging, then somehow we become the losers. You know, I went to the Portiuncula, where St. Francis used to live, St. Francis of Assisi. Mm-hmm.
And I felt his presence very strongly. And I just was not prepared to feel so much sweetness. And I said, how is it possible for anyone to be so sweet? And the answer I got was by seeing everybody as your brother and sister, and by never judging anyone. So people who do that, they've got their lessons to learn. It shouldn't happen. If you can stop it, do stop it. But usually you can't. Judgment is putting your ego above other people. That's not good. Finally, our job in this world is to help ourselves, to grow toward God. And this no one can do for us.
But ourselves.
Right.
Well, I think that's a great place to take a momentary break for station identification and commercial. And we'll come back not only with more questions and more answers, but we're going to come back to some of your music. So everybody stay tuned for that after this. And back to Swami Kriyananda. You know, I've been saying Swami Kriyananda, but is that the correct way of addressing you? Or do I say Mr. Swami?
No, or Swami is fine.
Just Swami?
Yeah.
Okay. And I've heard Swamiji. What is that?
You know, G is a suffix added in India just to show respect.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Swami means?
Swami literally means one who is one with himself. But basically, it's a monastic title, somebody who's dedicated his life to seeking God and to help others to find him.
Well, you have not only dedicated your life to that, you've dedicated your life to so much more. And you've also allowed yourself to have music flow through you. Hundreds of songs, as a matter of fact. I have had the pleasure of listening to a few of your CDs, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Okay. But right now, we have the Joy Singers of the Ananda community of Los Angeles that are going to sing for us one of your original songs. I believe it is called If You Are Seeking Freedom.
Okay.
Now this I've got to hear.
If you're seeking freedom in a revolution, oh, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there. For meeting ways of blazing, you'll find it amazing how the world can drag on just as before.
If you're seeking freedom in a marble mansion,
oh, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there.
For even when it's sunny, you'll be counting money, keeping up that showcase, your face lined with care.
And if you're seeking freedom on a throne of power,
oh, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there.
For though men all obey you, what if they betray you? Tempts you'll be and waiting for foes everywhere.
But if you're seeking freedom, cast away desires.
Why part like a beggar? You've wealth everywhere.
For never can you buy it, Christ, and you deny it. Freedom can't be hoarded, it's free as the air. And if you're seeking freedom, seek it on the mountains, got sunlight on your shoulders, the wind in your hair. For there's no one can hold you, fuss about or mold you. Once your heart is free, you'll be king everywhere. For there's no one can hold you, boss about or mold you. Once your heart is free, you'll be king everywhere.
The Joy Singers. Singing Swami Kriyananda's song, If You're Seeking Freedom. And once your heart is
free,
yeah. You're a king
everywhere.
King, queen everywhere.
Or a queen.
Or a queen. Right. Actually, I have had the pleasure of listening to that song and so many more in these three CDs. And I know you have so many. I've got Windows of the World right here. Secrets of Love, Melodies to Open Your Heart. And it's interesting that you use Donald Walters.
Yes. Yes, I did that because I wanted the music to be more widely heard. Hmm. If you hear Swami Kriyananda, you think, oh, it's all spiritual. And it is spiritual, but in a backward, sort of backdoor way, you might say.
Well, I enjoyed An Evening in Italy. Being Italian, of course, I enjoyed that. Sung in Italian, written by you. Actually, I wanted to return the favor of having gifted me these beautiful CDs and gift you with one of my Italian CDs. It's not very spiritual.
Thank you.
I used my name because I didn't want people to think it was spiritual at all. So, you have some very interesting goals. One of them I heard is that you're actually trying to bring truth in advertising.
Well, I suppose I am. I'm trying to bring truth everywhere.
Oh.
But of course in advertising. Why tell people that the... you see an ad for Pepsi Cola. And a lot of people laughing, enjoying themselves, drinking Pepsi Cola. I'm sure quite as many people have drunk Pepsi Cola in a state of solitary gloom.
Mm. No, that's beer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But if you show people drinking whatever in solitary gloom, they won't want to.
I don't say that's wrong. I think that's probably the best way to advertise that. But to say that something is a good car when you know it is not a good car, that is the falsehood in advertising. When you make claims that are not justifiable, that is false advertising. So what I said first was just fun.
Very fun, actually. Well, you are obviously one of the world's most spiritual leaders and considered by many a holy man. And I know you humbly...
I don't think I am or I'm not. I'm just nobody. So it doesn't matter to me.
Well, you seem to spend a lot of time with other nobodies, like the Dalai Lama and our Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Mikhail Gorbachev, Ben Goodall, Peter Gabriel. And what are you all nobodies up to?
You know, this whole club of Budapest, I don't like to say it, but actually I don't know what the hell it's about.
It's nobody's doing nothing. They could make a show about that on television.
Well, it's a beautiful concept, but I've never been at a meeting, and they've never invited me to a meeting, and I'm on the list. And I suppose there had been no meeting. Hmm. Anyway, I don't want to denigrate it. I think perhaps it's sort of the Hall of Fame. Hmm. Yes, I did meet the Dalai Lama when he just escaped from Tibet. The other people I have never met. And so I have to claim complete ignorance.
Hmm.
But I have met many well-known people. What does it matter? People's opinions are usually wrong anyway. So what does it matter whether they're well-known or not?
I'm sure their lives have been affected, and because they're well-known, they will affect others' lives.
I suppose you're right.
And so I'm grateful that you are well-known, because in your presence, the more you are known as you graciously walk through the world humbly, you are affecting many people.
Well, I actually am very grateful for that, because my wish, even from a child, has been to uplift mankind. And I don't want to make a joke about it because it's quite serious. Mm. I see so many suffering faces. And when I see somebody in the street who looks unhappy, I try to smile at him and make him feel better.
Mm.
One time, it was very interesting. It was my birthday and I was in Paris, France. and I wanted to go to a concert. As I got to the door, they were closing the door, saying nobody can come, there's no room anymore. And I said in French, but it's my birthday. And he said, oh, in that case, come in. Mm. So he let me in, and I sat behind the altar because there was no room in the auditorium. And it was a perfectly beautiful concert. Well, anyway, on the metro, which is their word for subway, afterwards, an old woman came up to me and I said, don't you remember me? I said, well, no, I'm sorry, I don't. Well, I was in the audience of that concert tonight. Oh, 700 people. But somehow she felt some sort of a personal connection with me because of my enjoyment of the music. Mm. Well, that kind of thing is very touching to me. And she sat down and was talking about her daughter who had been giving her trouble and how could I help her and so on. This sort of thing is what makes my life really worthwhile.
Mm. You've written some of these stories and your path in many books, and one in particular is The New Path.
Yes.
You've taken some of Paramahansa Yogananda's experiences and experiences that you had with him and shared in this way. What would be an example of a new path?
You know, there are many paths to God. There's the path of Roman Catholic Church, Episcopal Church, different churches. There's the path of Christianity, Buddhism, which they don't recognize God, but it's path to God. And Hinduism, etc. And this is a new path in the sense that it helps you to understand that by knowing who you are, you can know who God is. Hmm. And it's a path of meditation. It's a path that shows you in a practical way how raising your consciousness in the spine and directing it here, you can change your own consciousness. It's new in the sense that before this age of energy, and we're now in an age of energy, there are many things about the overall spiritual path people couldn't understand. And they had their approach to God was through dogmas. I don't think belief is going to change anything. People believed the world was flat, but that didn't make it so.
Wow.
And so what we experience now that man has reached the point, living as we do in an age of energy, of realizing that all is energy, even matter is just energy in a particular state of vibration, then it becomes new because it shows you how you can attain something of God's experience for yourself.
Hmm.
I think in those ways are what I meant when I wrote The New Path.
And a new path is a good way to start, a good place to start in...
I think so. As the author, I don't dare shout it. But yes, I do think so.
You humbly think so. I take that. I don't want this interview to end, so what do we do? What do we tell God to...
You know, there's one thing that's important, and that is that we love God. How can you love somebody who you don't know? Well, you know that you want happiness. Love that. Love that desire as opposed to the desire that you have to be unhappy, to punish yourself, to feel that you're a sinner, and all those things that people get into. Bliss. Bliss is your true nature. If you can feel bliss as your God, wonderful. God is not a man, God is not a woman, but he is both. In the sense he's the male principle and the female principle. I myself have a particular devotion to God as my divine mother. And so when I think of loving God, my own particular limited thought is to love her. To love that divine love which is always forgiving, always supportive, always trying to help me to understand what life is really all about.
You are how many years young?
What?
You are how many years young?
Well, I will be 85 in May.
Mm.
So.
Well, God bless you. you hopefully don't have any plans of going anywhere
soon, but you could be doing some of this work in another dimension. And when you are in another dimension, would you ever come back to Earth in a human body?
I'll tell you, that's been a dilemma of mine. I don't want to come back, but I have such a desire to help people that, on the other hand, I think I can't not come back.
Mm.
But it would be only for that purpose.
So, obviously, you've done this before. So, to at such a young age come to this.
Yeah.
22. Well, 15, you said, almost.
15 also, yeah.
Yeah. Well, luckily we have a few more minutes. We're going to take a quick break for station identification. We're going to come back and make sure we milk all the wisdom we can get.
Okay.
Right after this. We thankfully have the opportunity to listen to songs and read books and get to hear you and see you in person as you travel throughout the world being yourself. So, thankfully, it doesn't have to end here. And the songs, I have to say, it's interesting that when I first played your first CD, I thought, oh, that's sweet. The words are sweet. That's nice. And I like that. And then I played it again. And I thought, wow, sweet, but profound in a way. And then I played it again. And it was brilliant where they touched me, how they spoke to me in their simplicity. And I thought, we're not used to love coming through simple acts, simple words, simple gestures anymore. And that is what you were doing through your music, what you're doing right now. I'd like to get used to that.
You know, truth is simple. Man is complex. God is simple. We need to break down that sense of complexity. You know, one member of ours, he plays the cello, was a professional cellist for years, and he was supposed to sing a solo from an oratorio of mine. And he started to sing it, thinking of, oh, just a very simple little thing, no problem. He finally had to pull his car off the road because he was so deep he couldn't drive any further.
Mm.
Well, that's the kind of music I want to write. I don't want to make people feel complex about it. I want them to know that their own reality is simple peace and deep love and joy.
Mm. You walked into this room and I knew you were here without knowing, because first of all, everybody stood up, but there was an energy, there was a feeling, there was a joy, and people were quiet and people were smiling, and they haven't stopped smiling, and thankfully they've been quiet still, but they haven't stopped smiling since you walked in. What's happening?
You know, magnetism plays a much larger role in human lives than people know. It's through magnetism that you can succeed in life. It's through magnetism you can accomplish what you want to accomplish. And as you develop spiritually, you do develop a certain magnetism. That's why that woman in Paris somehow felt that we were friends.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had never met her. She knew I hadn't met her. But she said, "Don't you remember me?" This is something that everybody has latent within him.
Mm.
And it's the most important quality we can develop.
Mm. I hope it's okay that I feel like we're friends too.
What's that again?
I hope it's okay that I feel like we're friends too.
Well, I feel like you're friends.
Well, actually, I know that we're going to have this opportunity to do this again. As a matter of fact, next week we're going to get to do this in Italian.
Bene, molto bene.
Because I have no idea what he just said. But because Swami speaks several languages, actually, but Italian very well. And since I do...
Well, you know, I was born in Romania. So I grew up learning Romanian, German, and English. Then they sent me to school in Switzerland where I learned French. So with that backing, it's easier to learn new languages. The reason I finally learned Italian was that I was giving a lecture at the Yoga Academy in Milan, and I said, now, I was supposed to lead a meditation. I said, now, feel peace. Senti il braccio! Oh, my God.
Now, that's Italian. That I understood. Yeah. It usually came with a backhand from my father or something.
What he was saying was, in Italian, feel the peace.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. So, I've got to learn this blessed language. So they say in Italian, tradire e tradurre. To translate is to betray.
To translate
so
is to betray.
I better learn this language. Mm.
I understand what you're saying, is that you're speaking to the people in their language, but I humbly say to you, whatever language you speak to people, they will understand you.
Well, you know, I hope you're right. Many people who don't know Italian say they understand my lectures in Italian, and I hope it's not because I'm throwing so many English words in.
Well, I look forward to that interview where I'll get to interview you in Italian. This has been incredible. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, gosh. This matter of age is a bit of a drag.
You're doing great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Swami Kriyananda. I have to say that is an interview I won't soon forget. And when I say soon, I mean many lifetimes. You know, the interesting thing, and odd at the same time, because like I said, I want to experience that simplicity and that joy all the time. The interesting thing and odd thing is that he looked at me. He looked at me as if I was here. I can't even get my neighbors to look at me when I'm trying to say hello in Los Angeles. And throughout the whole interview, I felt like he was speaking with me, looking straight into my eyes. And that has happened so rarely, I don't remember the last time that happened.
It's interesting that you went right to that point, because what I was thinking towards the end of the interview is how you brought it completely full circle with that discussion, in that the discussion opened up about connecting and about looking and seeing, smiling, right? Smiling. Mm. That simple conveyance. And then at the end, it was again about smiling, right? And you made a point that I thought was very, very important, and it hit home for me, is that we're not used to conveying so simply anymore. Mm. and giving and receiving. And I just recently moved out of the Los Angeles area after 15 years, and I had grown up in the Midwest, and I was used to a different upbringing. But
you're not looking at me, by the way. I'm over here. I'm over here.
I became conditioned out of it. And as I was living in Los Angeles, and when I moved to this new area, I could say to people in response, I didn't know what to say because they were so friendly. I felt like I moved to Pleasantville. And it was so shocking that it made me think about this. And I used to think about times when I would go run in Los Angeles and you couldn't get people to look at you. You couldn't get people to talk at you, talk to you or respond. And so getting back to that, it kind of brought it full circle when he started talking about the science of it. Because when you think about the power energetically of a smile or a look and that conveyance of energy, we're actually denying each other. We as a people are denying that. Mm. We're holding it in. We're boxing it up, just like you would box up money and put it on the shelf and save it for another day.
We're making ourselves small instead of allowing ourselves to be big, right back to what we were saying at the beginning. Thankfully,
ever since I started singing professionally, when I wasn't, when I was working at IBM or doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing for the money or because my parents said that's what you're supposed to be in this world, it was one thing. But when I started opening up and singing, I found people being very open to me and responsive. And I found myself singing on stages and having people come up to the stage and want to talk to me. And at first I found that very annoying. And then afterwards I thought, well, it's kind of sweet, but you kind of have to ignore it while you're trying to finish a song or something. But it got to the point where people would come and try and talk to me. I remember one man was so persistent and I ignored him for 3 songs. And then I finally just couldn't, you know, but say, what? Nicely. What? And he said, come here. And I'm like, there's an audience here, but okay. So I leaned in and he said, your zipper is open. True story.
So, he could have just smiled. Yeah.
So sometimes you have to listen. I don't know what the moral of that is. But it's never happened again. I checked myself so many times before going on stage.
So I want to bring up one more point that I thought was so beautiful. And I have friends that have changed jobs every year, or every few years. But there's got to be something to this thing called bliss that he's doing.
He's been doing this for over 60 years.
There's my point.
Oh, sorry.
That's my point for 63 years. Whereas the people that aren't in bliss must be looking for something else so they continue to move, continue to change. And so there's something to that. I don't think we pay enough attention to finding that. We decide, I'll do this all day so I can make money and then I'll do what I enjoy. It's like working 365 days having 365 days and one holiday or working all week long and then you have the weekend. You know, we have things kind of backwards in some ways, maybe.
As a matter of fact, it's a good point that you bring up, because tomorrow Swami starts his, I keep wanting to say Mr. Swami, I want to be polite, but he starts his series tomorrow, and he talks about that. If you're not happy in your job, if you're not happy in your relationships, if you're not, then you're not in your bliss. So that's what he'll be talking about starting tomorrow here. So that's really exciting. Well, I wished for this interview to never end. It ended anyway, so Swami's right. What do I know? And who am I anyway? So we've come to the end of, not the end, the beginning of yet another beautiful moment. And I look forward to many more beautiful moments together with all of you. I am Filippo Voltaggio. This has been Life Changes with Filippo. My life has changed tonight, thanks to our guest, Swami Kriyananda, and thanks to all of you. I, along with our producer, Mark Lejeur, our producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer, Mark Greger, who left? Did he? Oh, okay. Thank you for being part of this world and being part of the change we all wish to see in this world. Ciao, everyone.